Good morning. We're convening the November 2012 meeting of the Washington State Forest Practices Board. I'd like to start by asking the board members to introduce themselves, starting with Dave.
Hi, I'm David Whittle, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Representative.
Norm Schatz, General Public Member.
I'm Kurt Cook, newly appointed board member from the Department of Agriculture.
Carmen Smith, Contract Logger Representative.
Phil Davis, General Member.
Morning, everybody. Tom Laurie, representing the Director of Department of Ecology.
Lena Young, chairing the board as designee from Commissioner of Public Lands, Peter Goldmark.
Paula Swedien, General Public Member.
Mark Kellerman, representing the Director of Department of Commerce.
Good morning. I'm Dave Herrera, General Public Member.
Good morning. I'm Bill Little. I represent the Timber Workers Unions.
And we do have two board members who are not with us this morning, Dave Summers and Bob Gunther, neither of whom could make the meeting today. And I'd like to start with a special presentation to recognize an outgoing board member. So Norm, if you would come up with a presentation I'd like to make for you. And this is a plaque commemorating your service on the Forest Practices Board.
Thank you.
And I have a note here from the commissioner, a short one I'd like to read. And this goes, Dear Norm, on behalf of the Department of Natural Resources, I would like to thank you for your service as a member of the Forest Practices Board. We appreciate your diligent work, dedication, and willingness to lend your expertise to the board. Once again, thank you for your time and energy, and I wish you the best for success in your future endeavors. Sincerely, Peter Goldmark, Commissioner of Public Lands. So I'd like to add my thanks and appreciation to the commissioners, and I'll give this to you as well. And if there's anything you'd like to make as remarks, this would be a good time for you to do that.
Okay, thank you, Lenny.
I did ask Chair Lenny if I could take a couple minutes just to give my thanks to the board. When I started my career, it was 1973. Forest Practices Act was passed in 1974. So I've worked my entire career in the auspices of this and the various rules and regulations and the development all the way through up till now. I was recently started a term as president of the Washington Forest Protection Association as of last Thursday, I think. And we want to be sure as an association that we avoid any potential conflict of interest that may arise between our association and the board. And so I have stepped down from my position 1 year earlier than it otherwise would have expired. And the successor, I think, believe has been named and will start service at the next board meeting. So that's sort of my story here. But again, my thanks to all of you as board members for your engagement in the process, for studying carefully the issues that are so vitally important to our industry. And they may seem trivial to many of you in different times and places and wonder why in the world we're arguing about such minutia, but it is very important. So thank you for your dedication and service that way, and it certainly has been a pleasure of mine to serve. I specifically want to call out Tom Laurie and Dave Summers. Tom and Dave are the only two members still on the board when I started. There's been a heck of a lot of turnover, you know, their services, longevity especially, but also the thoroughness with which they prepare and work, and it was certainly a pleasure to work with Tom on a couple of specific issues around watershed analysis and that sort of thing in places that I never thought we would agree, but we did. And so it was good to work through those things. Thanks staff. You've all been very helpful in answering the questions that we prepare or present to you, and whether this is at meetings or in between meetings, the preparation of materials, in advance notice of those things for us certainly allows us to be ready for a meeting when it does occur. So thank you for your diligent work. It really does mean a lot, and you probably don't get thanked very often. You probably get blamed more often, but I do thank you. And to all those of you that are members of the public that are here, I also want to say thank you because you've come, you listen, you testify, you help us be informed about what's going on. And we need that, whether it's at this meeting or at public hearings that occur in a rulemaking process. So as boring as these meetings might sometimes seem to be, we still value your presence and your input, and we do listen to that. So thank you for that. And again, Chair Young, thank you.
Thanks again, and congratulations on your service.
There are a few other board transitions I'd like to note. Norm's successor has been identified and appointed by Governor Gregoire, and that is Court Stanley. We'll be taking up Norm's seat on the board shortly. And then congratulations to both Paula and Bill, who have been reappointed and will be continuing as board members. Congratulations. And then, Kirk, of course, you're replacing Jaslyn Ford with Department of Agriculture. So a few other transitions. Our first order of business this morning is approval of the minutes from our previous meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes of the August 14th meeting.
Second. Okay, we have a motion to approve the minutes, properly supported. Any discussion around approval of the minutes? Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have one modification on page 4, and it has to do with the rulemaking timeline for hydraulic permit approval. There was what I thought was a clarification that was needed on in the second paragraph that starts with line 34, and specifically the last sentence I didn't believe was quite accurate, and it needs to be, well, right now it says that I clarified that DFW will invoke that management process in the revisions of the force protection standards. And what I think it really should say is that the adaptive management process would be invoked if the standards are changed or when the rules get revised. If you recall that there's going to be a rule process where the existing HPA rules are incorporated into the force practice rules by statute, but we're required to do that. And then that, I don't believe, is going to invoke the adaptive management process, but that Appendix M in the Forest and Fish Report requires adaptive management process to be considered and gone through if the standards change in the HPAs, in the hydraulic project rules. So there's a little bit of a nuance there that I wanted to make sure that we were all clear on.
Would you like to make a specific amendment to modify the minutes?
Thank you. I move to amend the minutes on page 4, line 34, as follows. After a short discussion, Engel clarified that DFW's current fish protection standards are required to be incorporated in the HPA-FPA approval process, and David Whipple clarified that when DFW updates the hydraulic code rules in Chapter 220-110 WAC, they will invoke as appropriate the adaptive management process through Appendix M of the Forest and Fish Report in the revisions of fish protection standards.
Do we have a second for that amendment?
I'll second.
Okay. Motion has been made and properly supported. Any discussion around the proposed amendment to the minutes? Okay. With no discussion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the amendment is made, and now we're back to discussion on the minutes. Any further discussion on the minutes? Okay, we have a motion to approve the minutes as amended.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Motion to approve the minutes as amended has been made and properly supported. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, minutes are unanimously approved. I have a short chair report this morning. First, I would simply like to note that the Department of Natural Resources and Department of Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Fish and Wildlife staffs are working together and preparing comments to go to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service by the Fish and Wildlife Service's December 10th deadline on the proposed federal listing of the Taylor's checker spot butterfly. Dave, do you have any little bit more detailed information on that for us?
Yeah, I just would like to give the board a really quick update. That the Taylor's checker spot butterfly is a state endangered species, and right now it's a federal candidate. And the Fish and Wildlife Service is proposing to do a listing and at the same time designate critical habitat for that species. And as you know, then that's going to trigger a consultation between DNR and DFW and then a recommendation to the board after that. So right now, I just want to remind the board that in 2007, the board adopted a voluntary protection approach for that species that was recommended by DNR as well as us. Because of the limited distribution of this species, where it is, it's not really good timber growing land. And we got agreements from the major forest landowners to develop management plans to protect that species and help in restoration and things like that. And so right now we have that system, the management plan kind of context. We have screening of forest practices applications to hopefully ensure that nothing slipped through the cracks. And we have damage to the resource. And then we also come to the board every February and report annually on what the status is of the management plans, if we've had any FPA issues, et cetera. And so I just wanted to kind of bring us back to that point and know that we have that system in place, and DFW and DNR coordinating to the extent that we can relative to what critical habitat from the Fish and Wildlife Service might mean in terms of overlap or not overlap with the state forest practices rules, and making sure that the feds understand the process that we've gone through and why we've gone through it. So we'll be making comments to the Fish and Wildlife Service in that regard. And the timeline, from what I understand, I haven't spoken with anybody at the Fish and Wildlife Service, but the listing document just says that, you know, they're taking comments that are due, I think, December 10th. And that decision will be made within the coming year. So not really an urgent matter, but just wanted to give everybody a heads up that that's coming. And we'll work with DNR to provide updates to the board as needed, probably every quarter, just to kind of keep it on the radar.
Okay. All right. Thank you. The second thing I wanted to note during the chair's remarks this morning is that starting with the board's February 2013 meeting, Commissioner Goldmark has designated our deputy supervisor for forest practices and federal relationships, Aaron Everett, as the new chair designee of the board. So Aaron will be picking up the gavel at the February 2013 meeting. I've enjoyed coming back and working with the board for a couple of meetings. I know Aaron will do a terrific job as the new chair designate for the board. So, Aaron, congratulations and thank you.
Thanks.
It's now time for public comment on any items of general interest that are not on the agenda today. And we have three people signed up for general comment, and I would ask you to keep your remarks to 3 minutes or less, and Patricia is going to be timing and holding the sign up if the time goes out. So first person signed up for general comment is Mary Skurlock. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Chairman Young, members of the board. My name is Mary Skurlock, and I'm basically here today to introduce myself to you as the incoming Conservation Caucus representative to the Policy Committee of your ADAPT Management Program. I have not testified before this body in several years, and so just want to give you a few thoughts that I have about coming in on my perspective on the Adaptive Management Program. First, I'm really pleased to be part of this program and be more actively involved after many years of peripheral involvement with the program as in my capacity with Pacific Rivers Council as their policy director. And I'm very well aware that over the last 20 years of my experience, that this program, the very existence of this program, breaks new public policy ground. And what we do here has the potential to provide a model for how to, and very likely sometimes how not to, put academic theories about adaptive management to work on the ground. This program is an important part of what I think gives the Forest Practices HCP its broad public support, as well as its institutional durability and its integrity. I'm committed to doing what I can to facilitate clear communication between my caucus and other stakeholders, to striving for agreement on as many issues as possible, and to identifying and addressing disputed issues efficiently. I believe that substantive and lasting improvements to this program are resulting from implementation of the recent settlement agreement negotiated by state environmental and industry stakeholders, and I'm already seeing that further beneficial changes are being identified as the policy committee walks through the terms of this agreement with county and tribal stakeholders. Further, the successful hiring of a facilitator as agreed to in the agreement promises to increase the productivity of the committee in the coming year. Very helpful for a newcomer. It's my caucus's sincere hope that policy will succeed in the coming year in forwarding recommendations to the board on three main fronts: board manual guidance on the identification of perennial initiation points and other items included in the comprehensive Type N strategy now being developed as the Clean Water Act milestone. Permanent water typing rule that meets the intent of the HCP to identify and protect fish habitat, and improved identification of areas prone to mass wasting based on the learning from the post-mortem study. In sum, I basically just hope to have a long and productive relationship with the board and DNR staff. Thanks.
Thank you, Mary. Next person for comment, Cindy Mitchell.
Let me excuse me, I meant to sign up under the 955.
Okay. Then Chris Mendoza. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, board. Good morning, everyone. Chris Mendoza with the Conservation Caucus, as many of you know. I'd like to open my comments this morning and thank Norm for his dedication to the board, and just comment briefly on working with you most recently with Forest Biomass and how that effort was a long one, but we couldn't have gotten through most of it, I think, without your help and opening up your lands and showing us how you folks do business with Forest Biomass. I think it helped the group incredibly to look at some on-the-ground operational work and clarifying a lot of issues that group was struggling with early on. So I wanted to thank you for that, and good luck with you. Secondly, now I'd like to talk a little bit about, I think Mary hit on it earlier, about the Type N network. I've come to the board before concerning compliance monitoring of these perennial initiation points. Mary brought up an issue with the board manual development, and to date, that's one area where compliance monitoring has not occurred. There has been no compliance monitoring effort directed toward finding these perennial initiation points, which many of you know sort of serve as the anchor for determining how those patch buffers get laid out in a watershed. If the point's off, then the buffers are off, basically. So what we're hoping is that that effort on checking those will happen soon. I think that in the absence of a board manual, you can still find those during the summer. However, one of the reasons we've been given they're not happening is because summer is also a time, as everyone knows, for fire season, and that can limit staff's ability, particularly all staff, not just compliance, but every human resources to attack that. So it's an unfortunate timing issue where we have a lack of human resources as well as a need for compliance checking. While the board manual is in works and coming, that will also help find these, but given that we've got several Type N studies coming out of the adaptive management program in the next 2 years, CMER's got a slew of long-awaited, long-term projects that have taken, you know, some 7-8 years to complete. In a best case scenario, we would have some compliance monitoring information to go along with those reports when they come out in the next 18 to 24 months. So we look forward to re-engaging with the compliance monitoring committee. However, we again are respectfully disagree with the decision not to begin checking those points sooner rather than later, and we hope that we can influence them otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Chris was the last person who had signed up for a general comment. Is there anyone else in the room who'd like to make general comments that didn't have a chance to sign? Okay. We'll go on to a segment of the meeting where board members have the chance to pose any questions they might have around the written staff reports that were submitted to the board. Board members, does anyone have a comment on a staff report? No comments on the staff reports, so we'll move along to Darren. Progress update on the settlement agreement regarding the Forest Practices Habitat Conservation Plan.
Good morning, members of the board. Darren Kramer, Forest Practices Division Manager. Mary gave you a preview, I think, on the status of the settlement agreement. If you recall from August, at that time, I had reported that an adaptive management proposal related to the adaptive management program reform elements of the settlement agreement had been delivered to Jim, the adaptive management administrator. And that Jim was working on his part of the puzzle there, where he reviews the proposal per board manual 22 and makes a recommendation to policy. Those elements, if you recall from August, in the settlement agreement regarding adaptive management program reform, were related to policy membership and voting, the dispute resolution process, and a master schedule of senior projects looking out about 20 or more years. Jim did his work and delivered a recommendation to policy on August 16th, and his recommendation was that policy accept the proposal and assign it to the policy track, which after a couple of meetings, policy did. So since September, policy has been holding special meetings specifically focused on the settlement agreement and those elements. They've reached conceptual agreement regarding policy membership and voting updates to that, as well as some revisions to the dispute resolution process. They're currently taking a look at the senior master schedule. They held a meeting a week or so ago on that and have at least one more scheduled in December. To take that issue up and hopefully finalize it. They've asked a couple of questions of CEMA regarding the master schedule and intend to get that feedback at the December meeting. So I anticipate that policy will be able to complete their work within one or two more meetings, probably by the end of the year. At that time, they will ask DNR staff to basically put those agreements into effect in writing. So that would come in the form of potential rule revisions to the adaptive management section of the rules, board manual revisions, as well as some updates to the ground rules. And we will be working on that, I expect, in the early part of the new year, and would bring a recommendation to you probably in May. We would target February for a 101 should we have rule revisions recommended, and May for draft rules, draft board manual, et cetera. So we'd be looking at August for a final adoption. That's the general schedule on the reform elements. As Mary mentioned, the settlement agreement also stipulated the hiring of a facilitator, which we've been working on. I expect we'll have one under contract if we don't already, and that person will be facilitating the December regular policy meeting. So from that point forward, at least for the next several months, we'll have a full-time facilitator. I think the contract calls for at least 5 regular meetings and then on an as-needed basis after that. So that's the update on the settlement agreement. We're looking for things to come to you, recommendations from policy in the early part of next year. Questions?
Are we anticipating any special needs either during legislative session or with respect to DNR's budget related to the settlement agreement?
Yes, we do. We have been queuing up. Certainly, long-term adaptive management funding is a priority for the program and the department and was specified in the settlement agreement. So we're working on that front. This legislative session, we're looking at our fund balances in the Forest and Fish Support account, and we'll respond accordingly based on where we are going into the legislative session and our projections for next biennium. And we may need to ask for additional fund balance unspent dollars that will be available in the support account and will help us fund those projects that are identified in the schedule over the next biennium. That doesn't resolve the long-term problem, and we're still working on that and anticipate probably 2 years out the next long session going for a more complete package that would fund the schedule out into the future. Any questions? Thank you.
Sure, thank you. We're now to the segment of the meeting where we'll take public comment on creation of a northern spotted owl habitat, critical habitat board committee. So, first person signed for public comment in this segment, Cara, good morning, how are you?
Good morning, thank you. Welcome, good morning board members and Chair Young. My name is Cara Whitaker, and I'm the staff scientist and policy analyst at the Washington Forest Law Center. I'm pleased to see the northern spotted owl on today's agenda, and I want to remind you from a biological perspective why spotted owls need to become a higher priority on non-federal lands. Despite being on the endangered species list for the past 22 years, spotted owl populations continue to shrink. In Washington state, their populations have declined by 40 to 60% during the last 15 plus years, at an average annual rate of 7% per year. At these rates, it's likely that we will witness the extirpation of spotted owls from our state within our lifetimes. Concurrent with the loss of owls has been the loss of habitat. The current forest practices rules allow landowners to cut all the suitable habitat in owl circles outside of the spotted owl special emphasis areas, or SOCEs, including the nest tree. Under these rules, more than 19,000 acres of owl habitat in these areas have been harvested statewide. Having sufficient habitat for nesting, roosting, foraging, and dispersal is even more important in light of competition from barred owls, but the harvest of habitat continues. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recognizes the urgency, the increased urgency of spotted owl conservation efforts. Across its range, spotted owl populations in Washington have the greatest risk of extinction compared with Oregon and California. The revised recovery plan identifies a more important recovery rule for state and private lands, specifically that states, quote, evaluate existing regulations affecting spotted owls and make changes where necessary and appropriate to meet recovery goals. Time is of the essence. I strongly urge you to please take the actions necessary to begin to reverse the decline of the owl on non-federal lands and prevent its extirpation from our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Cara. Next person signed for comment, Sean Cantrell. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Young, board members. Sean Cantrell, Executive Director with Seattle Audubon. I wanted to talk briefly about the draft motion that I don't think went out in the packet, but it's been distributed to you now, specifically around spotted owl and next steps. Seattle Audubon offers qualified support for this draft motion. We think it's a very necessary, important task. The reservation we have is a little bit about the context of the scope and timeline of the expanded charge that the implementation team would get underneath as a result of this motion. As Cara just mentioned, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has specifically called on the state of Washington to look at all the rules and regulations that you have in place to see whether or not they're doing all that needs to be done for conservation of the northern spotted owl. And we have been involved, and there's a long history, I won't go through it all, but a number of groups and work groups and processes and implementation teams, and I personally am still on the implementation team and think it's a worthwhile endeavor. But it needs to have a clear direction from this board to say, yes, you should in fact look at the regulatory structure to see whether or not it's doing what needs to be done, if it can and should be improved in some ways. And the motion, I think, generally gets at that, but I would hope that you could add a little bit more pointed language to that effect to say we explicitly want the implementation team to not just look at the incentives, which has been the primary charge to date, but to say continue to do that. That is critically important, but also as the Fish and Wildlife Service has encouraged the state to do, is to explicitly look at regulatory approaches that may be necessary. Maybe we don't need to make any changes, but we at least need to make sure that we look at all of the options, incentives, voluntary opt-in issues, federal regulatory assurances, state actions that may or may not be directly related to federal regulatory work. So that would be my request or suggestion as you look at this motion to make sure that you're looking at all options and directing the implementation team to not rule anything in or out at the outset, to have everything on the table. Thanks.
Thank you, Sean. Next person signed for comment is Peter Goldman. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Board. I'm Peter Goldman, Director of the Washington Forest Law Center and a member of the Conservation Caucus. I too would like to bid farewell to Norm. I've enjoyed working with Norm over the years, and I've appreciated his integrity and his professionalism in the job that he does. And thanks, Norm. And I know we'll be seeing you again in your new capacity, I'm sure. And also like to welcome our colleague Mary Scurlock, who is a tremendous asset to the Adaptive Management Program. Our caucus is extremely excited and honored to have Mary serve us and work with us on this. I would agree with you, our caucus, as Sean just said, does, with qualifications, support the draft motion that will be put before the board on ALS to move as a step to move forward. I have to, though, just do this little traipse through history, sort of reinforcing some of the points that Sean said and actually going to a few, that it really is time to start looking at the over 9.5 million acres we regulate in this and look at, start putting lines on a map and figuring out what we can do to put our best foot forward for the spotted owl in the areas that count most. What do we need to do differently? What are the boundaries that, what, at the end of the day, out of 9.5 million acres, we're not talking about a lot of acres to basically that would form the backbone of recovering, protecting and recovering this iconic bird species in the state of Washington. We've got to find somewhere in that 9.5 million acres where it works. 4.5 years ago, we went through sort of a darker period where we actually challenged the state's owl rules in federal court. And as I think many of you know, but so many of you are new, a federal judge in Seattle found that a specific company was taking owls under, in a preliminary sense, under the Endangered Species Act, and that the state's owl rules, the same ones that are on the books today, were allowing this take under the endangered species to take place. And since the time, there were settlements, and the settlement relative to the state required the formation of first a policy group and then an implementation team and then a technical team to try to move the ball forward, to try to identify where on a map we can make improvements, what can we do within those areas differently to protect the habitat we have left, and to again incent landowners to grow habitat to make up for the catastrophic amount of habitat that's been lost. Inaction at this point, it's been 4.5 years, honestly we have nothing to show for it. We haven't done anything differently. Since then we've had a federal recovery plan that has been issued that does identify private lands as having an important contribution to the recovery, protection and recovery of spotted owls. We have the new new critical habitat designation that will be out mid-month, November, that will further assist us in what the feds are saying, what habitat needs to be protected. Again, there's a very strong momentum that we need to do something, and it's been 4 years and we haven't done anything. So we're guardedly optimistic that we're going to have a new mandate at the implementation team level to do something. But at the end of the day, the buck stops here at this board. And the real question is will this board take a step forward to do what we need to do for owls in that habitat? And all these other processes are important, but The ultimate responsibility remains with this board, so I urge board members in this discussion to seek deadlines, to seek commitments, and remember its responsibility to protect habitat so that the state rules comply with the Endangered Species Act and so that the state rules conserve wildlife. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Kevin Godbout. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, members of the board. Chairman Young, I'd like to start also with a few acknowledgments. Norm, for your service to the board and your commitment to the industry. It's been very refreshing to work with you, and we can really count on you to show up. Next to Lenny. Lenny, you know, you're a true leader at DNR, and you have great integrity, and so when you show up at the board, we know that everyone's going to have a fair and honest shot, and it's going to be a well-run meeting, so I thank you. And to Aaron, I guess, you know, good luck. You've got big shoes. You've got big shoes to fill. But I do think he's got the confidence and capability to lead us through the set of complex issues we face. So I think we're in pretty good hands here. On the issue at hand, you know, I've been on the Northern Spotted Owl implementation team, and I think the team is capable of taking on this task. I do think we're going to have to think through how we manage our agendas so that we can kind of keep this new conversation maybe somewhat segregated from, you know, the other parts of the activities we do, because we can spend a lot of time, I think, spinning our wheels. So I think we're all capable of it, but we're just going to have to kind of be a little smart about how we get organized around adding on some new tasks to the group. But I do have a lot of faith in the participants in the group to be able to work through the assignment that you're likely to give us later today. And you know, just a couple other comments in response to, you know, earlier conversations this morning. It's not like the board and the state has not had a spotted owl rule complex in place for quite some time. We do have probably the most sophisticated sense of rules in the country related to this species. Thousands of acres have been dedicated by private landowners, basically encumbered through the SOCI process. Individual landowners have implemented habitat conservation plans across the landscape, safe harbor agreements. So, you know, we've done our fair share. And for the board to assume that more is needed, I think is a question that you're going to have to really think through. We're not particularly fond or think that we need more rules or new rules. We think the current set of rules is pretty adequate. The problem is daunting, but it's not a question of providing more habitat. In fact, your job at the board is to not provide more habitat. It's to maintain an economically viable timber industry, along with ensuring that when species are present, we have you know, adequate protections in place. But we're not about just growing habitat for the sake of maybe something will show up someday. And so I think as we work through this meaty issue in the next couple of years, I think the path we're taking is one in which it is going to be slow and trying to develop an incentives-based approach versus a hard regulatory approach is tough work. Now, my company's had experience in other parts of the United States, red-cockaded woodpecker in North Carolina, Louisiana, where we do have incentive-based approaches, works very well. And it's done under federal safe harbor agreements. It involves working with developers and other folks to offset mitigation approaches. And that's the future. And if we go backwards and take another strong regulatory approach, then you know, shame on us, because we've got a new way to design things. And I hope over time we can continue to think about, you know, a new way of doing business, because nobody wants to go back to the dark days. If we do, you know, we're all quite capable of it. You know, we're pretty much organized around that. We can do all that, but it's not going to get us any place. So we do have to think quite differently about this. And I think if you pass this motion later today, I think you're going to have the right group of people to at least give it a fair shake. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin. And last person signed for comment, Cindy Mitchell. Morning, Cindy.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. And Norm, congratulations for becoming president of WFPA. We look forward to your leadership there. My name is Cindy Mitchell with the Washington Forest Protection Association, and I wanted to make an opening comment about the state rule. If it were in isolation, that would be one thing, but it really is a complement to the federal protections under the Endangered Species Act. Every individual owl is protected. So regardless of the state rules, whether you're here or not, each individual owl has a federal no-take protection around it. And I wanted to mention the Spotted Owl Implementation Team and the real progress that that group has made. I, too, have been involved since prior to that group, which was the Spotted Owl Working Group emanating out of the dark days of the federal court that Peter referred to. And the vision is something that I really, really bought into of this entire process, and that's to change the current dynamic of fear and resistance to partnership. And that was codified inside the charter of the original Spotted Owl Work Group. And the goal of the Spotted Owl Implementation Team is to implement those consensus recommendations that the work group developed. And the number one recommendation out of the work group that the implementation team is working on is to develop incentives to achieve conservation goals. And embodied in the language was that the group was to look to the Federal Recovery Plan for guidance. And when looking to the Federal Recovery Plan for guidance, those policies are embodied in Recovery Action 15 and 18. Recovery Action 15 talks about developing incentives. Recovery Action 18 says use the information in the recovery plan to continue with the Spotted Owl Implementation Team process. So I think that this board and this direction is consistent with all of the effort that has occurred over the past many, many years on this issue. And the draft motion as written is consistent with the spirit of cooperation. It is consistent with alignment of the Federal Recovery Plan. It's consistent with the duties of the rules of the board. And as it's written, we will support the motion because we think it is consistent in pursuing that positive path that reduces the fear and supports a partnership. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. That concludes the people who signed up to provide comment on this topic. Is there anyone else in the room who didn't have an opportunity to sign up? We'd like to comment to the board on this. Okay. So at this point, I'd like to ask the Forest Practices staff and Aaron to tell us how things have gone since the last board meeting and present the proposal that's been mentioned several times.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Aaron Everett. I'm Deputy Supervisor for Forest Practices and Federal Relations with DNR and the State Forester, depending on which day you catch me of the week. So as you can tell, we've had a few different conversations going amongst the caucuses about this subject since the last time the board took this issue up. And specifically the last time around, the subject of discussion was a board subcommittee, a formal board subcommittee about sort of impending critical habitat designation from the Fish and Wildlife Service, which we again expect to still take place sort of mid-month. In observing that discussion and circling back with the caucuses individually, you have a memo in front of you that as concisely as I can sort of describes where we've come since the last meeting and now. And rather than the venue of a board subcommittee, my recommendation to you is to expand the membership of the Northern Spotted Owl Implementation Team and to charge it with some additional duties. And specifically, those additional duties would involve looking at potential federal regulatory assurance structures like Safe Harbor or HCP in a programmatic sense, and or conservation habitat banking structures. And the reason that is my recommendation is that I see critical habitat as sort of a moment in time wherein we, of course, as the DNR and the board, have specific responsibilities to look at what's decided by the federal agency and make a recommendation back to you. But also it causes us to have this very important conversation about where we're headed in the implementation team, whether there aren't some broader conversations that are ripe for us to have about spotted owl conservation and forest management in the state. I think that you've found that there's not perfect unanimity about how exactly we ought to chart that path forward, but I think there's good support for this approach among the caucuses, and it's one that I think has a lot of potential. I see a lot more in common about the management objectives among the caucuses than it's apparent on the surface in public comment. And I think mechanically this is a good approach to move that conversation forward. We keep it within the work of the implementation team itself, which I think is doing some important things. I'll concede not as quickly as anybody would like to see them. But I think this is a sustainable approach and moves the ball down the field, and I urge your support for it. If you have any questions at this time, I'd be happy to answer.
Dave.
Thanks, Aaron. After listening to the testimony and thinking about this a bit and talking with Aaron, I think this is a good approach. I went back and took a look at the existing charter for the implementation team and, you know, taking into account what we heard, I think, from the Conservation Caucus. The charter is pretty broad in my take on it. It focuses very much on incentive-based mechanisms that we all want to get to, but it also recognizes that the state rules may need to be modified. In what context, it's not specific, but I think it's broad enough to capture everybody's concerns here. And I think that we are at this important crossroads where we need to take a look at everything. We need to make sure that we assess the critical habitat designation, make sure we understand what it means and how it intersects with the state rules and carry those conversations through in the vein of trying to arrive at some kind of a good, sound, sustainable, incentive-based conservation package, but recognize that we may not get there entirely with that. So I think it's broad enough, and I support Aaron and what he's done with this.
Before we get too much farther into the conversation around the motion, Aaron, would you like to present the motion, or would a board member at this time like to make the motion so we can have that on the screen and look at it in a little more detail? Norm?
I'll make the motion, but I would like to ask a question if I could before.
Sure. Thank you.
Aaron, if this motion is passed and it calls for some additional members to the implementation team, can you describe the process by which they would be named and appointed?
Sure. We've got a lot of interest from individual caucus members. I would go to the caucus chairs, basically, and ask for their recommendation as to who they'd like to have appointed to the new seats. And I think we really wanted the implementation team to function as sort of a small group, but in observing a couple of the meetings and recognizing this type of subject matter, that probably we need a little bit bigger team, because it is hard to do the hard legwork in between meetings and make sure everybody's up to speed on what the questions really are for a given meeting's discussion. So that would be my request to the individual caucuses, would be for them to supply me with their recommendations for membership.
And are they then appointed by the board, or is that separate and outside of?
That would be a DNR.
Okay.
As the chair of the group.
Fine. Thank you.
And Aaron, I believe as part of this, we're contemplating a shift in the DNR person who would chair the team.
Yeah, I think we probably would need for me to be the DNR representative and the chairperson. We really enjoyed a lot of great support from Andy Hayes and Lauren Burns in this process, and I would want to avail ourselves of their good experience with it and the relationships they've built with the members, but it feels like something that I would really need to have a direct hand in.
So how many members are there right now?
Five.
Five to nine. Okay. So, along this line, I notice on the motion, that hasn't been made quite yet, it says board member engagement and participation is strongly desired. What are you thinking?
Well, I think both in terms of direct membership in the expanded team, but also you've heard a desire from particularly the Conservation Caucus, and I think everybody has the desire that these discussions don't just spin around in their own little world and never really yield any forward progress. And I think that's not my intention or DNR's intention to waste anybody's time. It recognizes that the issues are complex, and it's hard to get to perfect agreement and alignment around many of them. But that some additional attention from the level of the board would give more meaning to the conversations and put a little bit higher focus on it. And I'm thinking about again a couple of board members as folks that would get added as
beyond the nine.
Yeah, well, within the nine.
Oh, within the nine.
But certainly as we're conducting the business of this group, you know, we would be happy to have direct board member engagement and participation in meetings.
So we could either have staff present the motion and walk us through it, or we could have the motion made by a member at this time and look at it that way.
I'll present the motion. It's up on the screen.
I'm trying to figure out which one's easier, the paper or the... I have better long-range vision. The Northern Spotted Owl Implementation Team, in addition to its duties assigned in February 2010 and in accordance with its approved charter, is further directed to investigate and make recommendations to the board not later than the August 2013 board meeting as to whether the state should consider seeking voluntary opt-in federal assurances for forest landowners designed to promote the establishment, use, and operation of a Northern Spotted Owl Conservation Bank or other voluntary conservation incentive planning tools or a programmatic habitat conservation plan, safe harbor agreement, or other federal assurance mechanisms. The Northern Spotted Owl Implementation Team for recommendations shall at minimum include an evaluation of the process, planning requirements, time and costs upfront and ongoing, required to secure and maintain such assurances, an evaluation of forest landowners' interest in enrolling with such programs, the degree to which achieving the Northern Spotted Owl Implementation Team chartered purpose and duties may be enhanced by securing such assurances, the degree to which such assurances and planning structures would support Northern Spotted Owl conservation in light of the Washington State Forest Practices and Rules, the Northwest Forest Plan, 2012 Federal Northern Spotted Owl Recovery Plan, and anticipated federal critical habitat designations. To accomplish this task, DNR is directed to form an expanded Northern Spotted Owl Implementation Team of 9 members to include DNR as chair, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, 2 industry caucus representatives, 2 conservation caucus representatives, a land trust group, a small forest landowner representative, and 1 U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service representative. Board member engagement and participation in the team is strongly desired. DNR is further directed to provide interim progress reports on these discussions at the February and May 2013 meetings of the board.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
A second.
Okay, Hartman seconds. Discussion on the motion.
Could you repeat the motion?
I don't know if that's the longest board motion. I'll ask Patty.
Any discussion around the motion?
Well, I would like to apologize for my premature kind of statements before the motion was made, so I'll reiterate those at this time.
I would just like to comment as well that, as was brought up, the implementation team is ongoing, is working well, and while progress is probably slower than all of us would have anticipated or desired, it is still progress. And it's a good foundation, and adding some responsibilities to this team, I think, will be an effective way of looking carefully at what can be done, and if incentives and voluntary measures do not meet what is needed, it's then the opportunity to look at other measures.
Paul.
I just had a couple quick comments. I think that the work that the NSOIT team has been doing so far on incentives is very important, and that the overall effort is going to hinge largely on the ability of those of our group really to come up with a substantive package around incentives. But I think that what this board motion does is really complement that and allow the incentives to be more successful. So a federal assurances type package, whether it be a mandatory safe harbor and or having, and I would actually see it as an and or, not an or. I think there's the potential for a certain level of